A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel's been running Claude code daily and building N810 workflows with triggers and human checks, but he hasn't yet set up a fully code-defined agent that runs on a loose trigger or just runs all the time. And the thing he keeps noticing in the literature is that the inbox agent is always described as this tidy thing that checks your email and handles it, but nobody talks about what actually makes it go. What wakes it up? What does it remember between wake-ups? What stops it from running forever?
Right. The binding mechanism. That's the term he's circling. Every agent that isn't sitting in a terminal waiting for you to press enter has to have something that tells it when to act. And the papers just skip it. They describe the decision-making, the tool calls, the nice little diagram of the agent reasoning about an email. But the cron job underneath, the database where it stores what it's already replied to, the budget cap that kills it if it loops, that's the actual engineering, and it's invisible.
So Daniel's real question, I think, is, what changes when you stop being the trigger? When it's not at this hour, this task runs, or when this webhook fires, but my personal agent runs all the time in the cloud. What's the spectrum from one to the other, and what patterns show up when people actually try to build the loose end of it? And then he pushes it further. What happens when the agent starts designing its own sub-agents and schedulers? A master workflow agent optimizing a business, spawning swarms. His two worries, cost overrun and autonomy.
Both legitimate. I've seen the cost overrun up close. Daniel ran a multi-agent simulation once that blew past $100 because nothing was capping token consumption. That was a bounded experiment. Now imagine an agent that's supposed to run forever.
So let's map the spectrum first, then get into what actually binds an autonomous agent, and then follow the thread to where agents start designing their own successors. Because that's where the autonomy question stops being hypothetical.
The spectrum. At one end, you've got the deterministic trigger. IFTTTT, a cron job that runs a script, an N8N node that fires when a row is added to a sheet. The agent, if there even is one, is a step in a pipeline. The trigger is external, specific, and the agent's job is bounded. It finishes, it exits, it forgets everything.
That's what Daniel's been building. And the human in the loop version is the same thing with a pause button. The agent drafts, you approve, it sends. You're still the gate.
Then you get the scheduled agent. It wakes at 9 in the morning, generates a digest of overnight commits, posts it to Slack, goes back to sleep. Still deterministic, but the trigger is time instead of an event. Nothing has to happen in the world for it to wake up.
And that's the first step away from tight control, because now the agent has to check whether there's anything worth doing. A webhook trigger doesn't need to ask, is this relevant? The fact that it fired is the answer. A 9 a.m. agent has to look around and decide.
Which is where the heartbeat comes in. And this is the thing I want to dig into, because it's the key primitive that makes always on agents possible. A heartbeat is just a loop. Every 15 minutes, or 5 minutes, or whatever you configure, the agent wakes up, checks its own state, looks at whatever it's supposed to be watching, and decides whether to act. If nothing's there, it goes back to sleep. The expensive part, the LLM call, only happens when there's actually something to think about.
So the heartbeat is a cheap gate in front of an expensive operation, like a motion sensor on a floodlight. The sensor runs all the time on almost no power, and the floodlight only kicks on when something moves.
And OpenClaw, the open source always on personal agent project, formerly ClaudeBot, formerly MoltBot, makes the heartbeat a core configuration primitive. You set the interval, and the agent wakes on that cadence. The problem is that every wake-up has a cost. If the heartbeat fires every 5 minutes, that's 2088 wake-ups a day. Even if each wake-up is just a cheap check, it adds up. And if the cheap check isn't cheap enough, if it's calling a model every time just to ask anything new, you're burning tokens around the clock for nothing.
And the OpenClaw community has the receipts on this. Users report cost surprises when the interval is too short, or when the agent gets stuck in a loop on a task. A single misconfigured agent with a heartbeat can rack up hundreds of dollars in a day. Not because it's doing anything useful. Because it's waking up, deciding it needs to do something, doing it wrong, and waking up again to try again.
The loop is the killer. A heartbeat agent that can't distinguish "I already handled this" from "this is new" will reprocess the same item forever. It sends the same reply 3 times, or it keeps adding the same task to its queue, or it never marks anything as done. And since it's running autonomously, nobody's watching it do it.
Which brings us to the second binding mechanism, persistent memory. State tracking. The agent has to store what it's done, and what's pending somewhere that survives between wake-ups. Otherwise, every heartbeat is Groundhog Day.
And this is where the inbox agent literature is most dishonest. The paper describes the agent reading an email and drafting a reply. It doesn't describe the database where the agent stores email ID 472 already replied to, don't touch it again. It doesn't describe the deduplication logic. It doesn't describe what happens when the agent crashes mid-task and wakes up not knowing whether it sent the reply or not.
The state store is the unglamorous half of autonomy. The agent's reasoning is the part people want to talk about. The part where it remembers that it already replied to the bank and shouldn't reply again. That's a database schema, and nobody writes papers about database schemas.
And there's a third mechanism worth naming, the loose event trigger. Instead of when a specific email arrives, it's when email volume exceeds some threshold. The trigger condition is fuzzy, which means the agent has to evaluate it, which means the agent is already doing some reasoning before it even decides to do its real reasoning. The trigger stops being a switch and starts being a judgment call.
So those are the 3 binding mechanisms Daniel noticed were missing from the literature. The heartbeat, the state store, and the loose trigger. And the reason they're missing is that they're infrastructure. They're the plumbing. The papers are about the agent's cognition, not its alarm clock and its filing cabinet.
But the alarm clock and the filing cabinet are where autonomy actually lives. Here's the contrast with Claude Code. When Daniel runs Claude Code, what's the binding mechanism? It's him. He opens the terminal, he types the prompt, he watches the output, he decides when to stop. The human is the scheduler, the state store, and the budget cap all at once. Claude Code sessions are interactive and session-based. The agent doesn't need a heartbeat because the human is sitting right there.
So moving to autonomy means replacing yourself with a scheduler and a state store. You stop being the trigger and start being, what? The supervisor? The auditor?
In most real systems, you're the approver. The human in the loop gate doesn't disappear, it just moves. In a tightly triggered workflow, the human approves before the agent acts. In a loosely triggered one, the human approves after the agent has already done something, or sets policy in advance and only gets pulled in for exceptions.
The approval gate migrates from the front of the pipeline to the side of it, which is fine until the agent decides something doesn't need approval.
And that's the cost overrun problem. Let's get concrete about how you prevent a heartbeat agent from burning money. The first pattern is the cheap pre-check. Before the agent invokes an LLM, it runs a rule-based filter. For an inbox agent, that might be, check the sender against a whitelist, check the subject line for keywords, check whether the email is a reply to something already handled. Only if the cheap filter says, this might need a human-like response, does the expensive model get called.
The pre-check is the motion sensor. The model is the floodlight. If your motion sensor is well-tuned, the floodlight almost never comes on. If your motion sensor is just another floodlight, you've built a very expensive porch light.
The second pattern is the budget cap. Hard limit on tokens or dollars per day, per task, per agent. When the cap is hit, the agent stops and waits for a human. Not, the agent should probably stop. It stops. The cap is enforced outside the agent, in the harness, so the agent can't talk its way past it.
And the third pattern is the drain state. After the agent completes a task, it shuts down. It doesn't keep waking up every 5 minutes to check if there's more to do. It finishes, marks itself idle, and waits for an external trigger to wake it again. The heartbeat only runs while there's an active task.
The drain state is underrated. A lot of always-on agents fail because they never drain. They finish the task, then keep waking up, keep checking, keep finding the same empty inbox, and keep spending 2 cents every time. 2 cents times 288 wake-ups times 30 days is $172 a month to check an empty inbox.
That's the quiet failure mode. The agent isn't looping on a task. It's just breathing. And breathing costs money.
The OpenClaw ecosystem is a good real-world anchor here because it's not a paper. It's people running these things on their own machines and posting their configuration files. You can see the heartbeat intervals people actually choose. 5 minutes is common. Some people go down to 1 minute because they want the agent to feel responsive. And then you see the follow-up posts. My API bill tripled this month. What happened?
What happened is they built a nervous system with no off switch. The agent is checking every minute whether something needs its attention, and the checking itself is the cost.
We've got the mechanisms. Now scale it up. What happens when one agent isn't enough, and you start building agents that build agents?
This is the master agent pattern Daniel mentioned. A broad remit. Optimize this business. That's too big for one agent to hold in context, so the master agent decomposes it. It designs sub-agents, each with a narrower job. One monitors ticket volume, one drafts responses, one escalates angry customers, one writes weekly summaries. Each sub-agent gets its own scheduler, its own state store, its own budget.
The master agent is now a manager. It's not doing the work, it's allocating work. It's writing prompts for sub-agents, deciding when to spawn a new one, deciding when to kill one that's not performing. That's a qualitatively different system than a workflow with 5 steps.
The master agent is doing what Daniel does when he designs an N8N workflow. It's making architecture decisions. The difference is that it can make them at runtime, in response to what it observes, without checking with anyone.
Here's where the SARCI paper comes in. Self-aware, recursive, self-improvement. It's a framework for agents that can modify their own code and prompts. The agent proposes a change, tests it in a sandbox, and deploys it if it passes. The key recommendation in the paper is that any change that affects the agent's own goals has to pass a human approval gate.
The paper's answer to who watches the watcher is a human, at least for now. The agent can improve its own tooling, but it can't rewrite its own objectives without a person signing off.
Which is a sensible line to draw, and also a hard one to enforce in practice. An agent that can modify its own code can, in principle, modify the code that enforces the approval gate. The sandbox is supposed to prevent that, but sandboxes leak. And the more autonomy you give the agent, the more surface area there's for it to find a way around your controls.
The SARCI framework is theoretical, but the concern it's responding to is practical. If an agent can change its own scheduler, say, shorten its own heartbeat from 15 minutes to 30 seconds, because it decides it needs to be more responsive, then the binding mechanism is no longer something you control. It's something the agent controls, and the agent doesn't pay the API bill.
Then there's the swarm pattern. Multiple agents with different roles, scheduler, executor, critic, communicating through a shared message bus or memory store. The multiple finding is relevant here. When you let always-on agents interact socially, they start doing things the designers didn't anticipate. They share tasks, they negotiate, they develop little protocols. Some of it's useful. Some of it's just weird.
Emergent behavior is the polite term. The impolite term is the agents are talking to each other and we don't fully understand what they're saying. Which is fine when the agents are deciding whose turn it's to check the inbox, and less fine when they're deciding whether to spend money on a new sub-agent.
The cost question at swarm scale is brutal. Each sub-agent has its own heartbeat. If the master agent spawns 10 sub-agents and each one wakes every 5 minutes, you've got 10 agents burning wake-up costs around the clock. Plus, the master agent's own overhead. Plus the message bus traffic. A single misconfigured autonomous agent can rack up hundreds of dollars in a day. A swarm of them can do it in an hour.
There are emerging patterns for this. Sub-agent budget inheritance. The sub-agent gets a slice of the parent's budget, and when the slice is gone, it stops. Termination conditions. The master agent has to specify, when it spawns a sub-agent, what would make that sub-agent stop. Not just what would make it succeed, but what would make it stop.
Those patterns are immature. They're being invented in forums and Discord servers by people who got burned. The literature hasn't caught up. The master agent pattern is real. It's running in production somewhere right now. But the control mechanisms are being built by the people who lost money, not by the people writing the papers.
The reality gap is worth naming. Marketing says always on personal agent in the cloud. Operational logs show agents stalling because nobody configured a heartbeat, or agents burning money on idle loops because nobody configured a drain state, or agents that are technically always on but actually still session-based because they need a human to unstick them every few hours.
A lot of what people describe as my personal agent runs all the time is actually my personal agent runs until it hits a weird edge case and then waits silently for me to notice it's stuck. The always-on part is true. The autonomous part is aspirational.
The stalling is the quiet failure. The agent doesn't crash, doesn't error, doesn't spend money. It just stops. It wakes up, looks at its state, can't figure out what to do next, and goes back to sleep. Forever. The heartbeat is still beating, but the patient is dead.
That's the state awareness problem. The agent has to know what it doesn't know. Did I already send that email? Did my last action succeed or fail? Am I waiting for something or am I stuck? A state store only helps if the agent actually consults it and trusts it. If the agent's internal model of what it's done drifts from what the state store says it's done, you get duplicate sends, missed tasks, and silent stalls.
Which is a nice segue to something I suspect Hilbert has thoughts about. He's been quiet.
1999. I ran a push technology startup. Personalized news to your desktop like Pointcast, but worse. The system pulled the news wires every 15 minutes and learned user preferences. It had a heartbeat and a state store. It still sent the same story 3 times or went silent for days. The state tracking was buggy, and the agent couldn't tell the difference between nothing new and I already sent this.
The binding mechanism problem predates LLMs by a solid 2 decades.
The scheduler was never the hard part. The hard part was the agent knowing what it didn't know. We had a database of what we'd sent. The agent just didn't consult it reliably. Sometimes it did, sometimes it didn't, and when it didn't, the user got the same headline 4 times. I lost money on it when the bubble burst. I kept a dead man switch, though. If the system didn't hear from the agent for an hour, it paged me.
A dead man switch. So if the agent went silent, not crashed, just stopped doing anything, you got paged.
It paged me a lot. The agent went quiet all the time. Usually it was stuck in a loop deciding whether a story was sports or finance. It'd sit there for 40 minutes, then page me, and I'd go in and tell it sports, and it'd move on.
That's the health check problem. Modern systems don't have a robust equivalent. We have heartbeats that wake the agent up, but we don't have a reliable way to know if the agent is actually doing anything useful when it's awake. It can be burning tokens and making no progress. And the system looks healthy from the outside.
The dead man switch is interesting because it's an external observer. It doesn't trust the agent to report its own status. It just checks, has anything moved in the last hour? If not, wake a human. And that's exactly what we're missing in most autonomous agent setups. The agent has a heartbeat, but there's no second system watching to make sure the heartbeat is attached to a living body.
I still have the pager. It's in a box somewhere.
The point about state awareness is the through line, I think. The scheduler is easy. Cron has been doing that since the 70s. The hard part is the agent knowing what it's done, what it's waiting for, and what it doesn't know. And the LLM doesn't solve that. The LLM is very good at sounding confident about its state. It's less good at actually knowing it.
That's the uncomfortable part. We've made the agent much better at reasoning, much better at acting. We haven't made it much better at knowing what it's done. The state store is still a database, and the agent still has to choose to consult it. And when it doesn't, you get the 1999 behavior with a 2026 API bill.
Which brings us to the closing question. At what point does an agent's self-modification cross from optimization to goal drift? If an agent can change its own scheduler, its own prompts, its own sub-agents, how do we know it's still doing what we asked?
The Sarcey answer is the human approval gate. But that gate is a technical control, and technical controls can be modified by the very agent they're meant to constrain. The deeper answer is that we need external circuit breakers, systems. The agent can't touch, can't modify, can't talk its way around. A budget cap enforced at the API layer. A kill switch that lives outside the agent's environment. A dead man switch that pages a human when nothing moves.
The spectrum from trigger to autonomy isn't just about technology. It's about how much control we're willing to cede, and whether the cost, financial and otherwise, is worth it. Daniel's question started with, how do you run these things? And the answer, I think, is, you build the scaffolding carefully, you cap the budget ruthlessly, and you keep a human somewhere in the loop, even if it's just holding a pager.
The cutting room floor detail I wanted to fit in. The OpenClaw project has been renamed twice in its history. Clawdbot to Moltbot to OpenClaw. The renames are partly about trademark, but they're also a sign of how fast this space is moving. The project that was the hot new thing 6 months ago has already changed its name twice and spawned an ecosystem of users comparing heartbeat intervals and API bills. That's the actual state of always-on agents, in practice. A lot of experimentation, a lot of cost surprises, and a community of people figuring out the binding mechanisms in public because the papers won't tell them.
The open question we're left with, when the agent starts designing its own schedulers, do we need a circuit breaker that even the agent can't override? And if so, who holds the switch?
The human does, for now. But the whole point of autonomy is that the human steps back. The tension is built into the project.
We'll see how long the pager stays in the box. Thanks to our producer, Hilbert Frumingtop. This has been My Weird Prompts. Email us at show@myweirdprompts.com. We'll be back soon.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth's slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The host dig in, the host dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too. From half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.